Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 79, recorded January 26th, 2011. Hot honeycomb action. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford, introducing the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch, featuring gas-free power, zero CO2 emissions, and battery management technology that lets you go the distance. Learn more at FocusElectricPower.com. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to twig.hover.com. It's time for TWiG This Week in Google and the Cloud. And starting our cloud-like podcast today, it's Gina Trapani from smarterware.org. Hi, Gina.
Oh, I've had espresso.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to talk fast.
Uh-oh, she's in trouble.
Faster than usual.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Gina, Android.
Gina, Jeff's not here this week.
It's so sad. We miss Jeff a lot.
He's in Switzerland.
Yeah, you know, he's I'm sure there's a chocolate fountain and he's, you know, kibitzing with important people. You know, I get it.
Chocolate and cheese fountain, probably.
There's right. Definitely fondue involved,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely.
There's gotta be.
But we got some good replacements, starting with Danny Sullivan is here from, now it's searchengineland.com now, right?
That's right.
So we want everybody to go searchengineland.com and not the other
one. Excellent.
Not the other place.
Danny, can't even remember the name.
Danny spends a lot of time covering this. We were talking about preparing for the show ahead of time, and we said, Danny, you're the one person who doesn't really have to. This is your life.
I'm ready to go. This is exciting. I'm like, oh, I could talk about that.
I know that story. I know what's going on there.
I hope. We'll see.
Also joining us right now, we've been trying to get him on for some time, a good friend of Gina's, Mitch Wagner, also a San Diegan. Hey, Mitch.
Hey. Glad to make it this time. I got the day right.
And you're with, what is the CMO site? Tell us about that.
The CMO site, it's a online community and group blog for CMOs and high-level marketing executives at large companies.
Where the marketing elite meet.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
Trying to work feet into there, too. It just seems like
meet to beat their feet. It's very Sinatra. So there's, yes. in the Sinatra at the Sands, 1965, he tries to make a joke, and I've listened to this album 1,000 times, because it's one of the great albums of all time, one of the great Sinatra albums of all time. But he says, welcome to somewhere, and he says, where the elite meet to eat, and if I rhyme that, we're out of business. And I'm trying to figure out what the heck rhyme could put them out of, I don't understand. Anyway, everybody listen to that and send me emails. Explain it all.
Maybe he was talking about Twitter, like if you tweet.
If
he
you
was
tweet,
40 years ahead of his
40,
time.
Yeah, it was. It was 1965. Well, I'll tell you what. This is not the show about Frank Sinatra. This is the show about Google and the cloud, and there are lots of things to talk about. It's too bad Jeff's not here, because Jeff, in the past, and Jay Rosen and others have spent a lot of time talking about and explaining to me what demand media is. Demand media went public today, an initial public offering, the stock market. It valued its shares before the IPO at $17. It went immediately to $25. Now it's fallen a little bit, about $23 a share. Danny, what is this demand media? What is this? Should I buy stock?
Maybe this morning.
Yeah, it's too late now.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to say. It's a, in some ways, this is, you know, the first huge, biggest SEO driven company we've ever seen. They have taken the idea of search engine optimization to its, you know, perhaps ultimate end, where they are literally creating content based on what it is that they can see people are searching for, and targeting areas that they think are most valuable, what they can sell advertising against. And it's actually very smart. And really shouldn't be controversial at all either. I mean, if you think of all the self-help books out there or all the shows that are designed to give you practical advice, if somebody's got questions and somebody else is giving them authoritative answers, you wouldn't have a problem with that. Where the controversy comes in is that a lot of these answers sometimes don't seem to be that great. I'm not saying all of them aren't great, and they do have good content. They do answer questions, but sometimes you can encounter the same answer answered multiple times, sometimes in low quality, sometimes not really an answer. And then they also can get lumped in with other content farm kind of sites where you don't get answers at all. You know, you search for something using a question, you're searching the form of a question, and you just end up with a lot of garbage and kind of getting a runaround. I don't know if that's the future or not. I tend to think one of the problems with a company like that is that anytime someone gets really big on Google's radar, it's a danger sign. You become very dependent on that, and one of their biggest, you know, drivers of traffic is coming from Google. So
Google could put them out of business.
Oh yeah.
By changing its algorithms or somehow.
Google could do that overnight, and ironically hurt itself along the way, because a lot of a lot of demand media's money comes from the AdSense units that they carry from Google itself.
So maybe the stock market's figuring, well, Google's never going to do that.
And they could do that. They might assume, why would Google shoot itself in the foot? Right. But, you know, while AdSense revenue is a big deal to demand media's AdSense revenue, I don't think, is anything but a drop in the bucket to Google overall. More important, the teams at Google that are in charge of search quality literally do not care what AdWords has to think. They just don't. It's like a reporter in the New York Times newsroom, and you can imagine that if some advertiser comes running in saying, hey, you're doing this thing on some big company and we don't like it, they're going to pull all their ads. And, you know, reporter will dig in and be like, well, too bad. And that's the kind of, I don't want to say rivalry, but that's the kind of division that you really do have at Google, and I've seen that sort of thing. So
it's not like they're a big moneymaker. They went off at a higher price, and they sold more shares than the market would expect. In the prospectus, they say they lost $3 million on $179 million in revenue for the first 9 months of 2010. They didn't have fourth quarter numbers, but they estimated fourth quarter revenue $71 to $73 million with a net loss of $1.9 million. They're not even profitable. And yet Wall Street rewarded them and said, hey, we want more. Is that
bubbles, course, back, baby?
Yeah. Well, there haven't been This is the first tech stock IPO of 2011. There weren't very many that last year. They were all Chinese mostly.
Nobody could buy any of that Facebook stock that's not even being sold publicly anyway. So
it could just be a thirst for any technology company. Now, Matt Cutts responded to this. Why would Google not like demand media? We know why they might like them. Why would they not like? Do they pollute search results?
I think Google doesn't like the idea of anybody building a business on its own back, which can sometimes be ironic.
That's what everybody does.
I know.
You can't Google me. I don't have a business either.
When you have a company like Demand going out and saying, we generate all this stuff at Google, there's an implication or a suggestion in there that they know how to manipulate Google and they can just make it happen. And you can imagine that is not going to go over well with people at Google who feel like, no, you're not manipulating us. We have our own independent algorithm, and maybe you're successful in some regards, but you won't be successful in others. But nobody manipulates us, right? That would be their view. And so I think that would be the first thing that would cause, you know, some people at Google to be uncomfortable about Demand.
Is Demand Media gaming Google? I mean, is there a case for that?
I've not seen anybody put forward any evidence that they've been violating Google's guidelines.
No, they're just using the system as it's configured to their benefit.
And one of the advantages they have is that their domains are powerful. You know, eHow carries some respect.
Is eHow owned by Demand Media?
It's one of their their properties. I think it's still their main property.
Now, about.com, which is similar, is not. It's owned by the New York Times.
Right.
In fact, this made this interesting. Demand Media more valuable, at least via its stock price, the higher valuation than the New York Times.
I know.
And now a story is coming out. The New York Times, in fact, tried to buy Demand Media to merge it with About.com. So even old media sees the value of Demand Media.
Which is funny because a year ago you had New York Times and a lot of newspapers saying that they couldn't make money off of search engines and they had to put up a paywall. And in fact, the New York Times is about literally about to do that, right?
Well, that's why they want to buy these guys. Hey, they figured it out.
But demand media doesn't have a paywall. They just do it with advertising. So, you know, they're just very, very smart.
And, you know, one thing that I think we talked about last time we talked about demand is that any good blogger or web publisher watches the ways in which visitors reach the site. We did this at Lifehacker the whole time. I mean, it's pretty much exactly what demand's doing. They're looking, what are people searching for? What information do they need? We're going to find it. We're going to package it in a way that maybe is more useful than the list of links that you get on a topic now.
In fact, sometimes it feels like old media judgmentalism this is an internet upstart.
Right. This idea that they're gaming Google. I mean, I think the same way you could put, well, that they're servicing their visitors, you know, they're serving readers. I mean, you can look at it either way. And certainly some of the articles from some of the demand properties are kind of crappy, but not all of them are. I mean, you know, really, it really depends.
They're kind of, I find the articles there to be kind of mediocre at best. We were joking before the show started that I was looking up how to do a hard reset on the iPhone. And one of the things that came up on these content forum was 350 words on turn it off and turn it back on again.
All right. But I'm going to put my hat on as Mr. Demand Media. I don't know who he is, but so I'm Mr. Demand Media. Look, I don't care. I mean, that's old media. That's old school saying, who are you to judge the value of my articles? At least people come to them and click on them and read them.
In the immortal words of Captain Kirk, who do I have to be? I mean, I'm just a guy at 10 o'clock at night who's trying to remember how to do a hard reset on his iPhone, and I'm not on that site. This happens all the time.
So your contention, Mitch Wagner, is that it pollutes, the content is low-grade pollution, essentially.
I found that if you're looking up my thermal, I haven't done the study on this like Danny has, but I found if you're looking up either health information or you're looking up Mac and Apple related information, which is two things I do a lot. You know, the first page or two is garbage. It's just all word of mouth and people asking questions in a lot of these content forms.
We've gone through this with Google before, where you had a lot of link farms, and for a while, about I can't remember, 2 or 3 years ago, Google was just crap, and then they fixed it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I've seen there's a kind of a growing drumbeat from a lot of people saying Google's search results are getting less and less useful. Are you hearing that, Danny?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, it's even accelerated over the past 6 weeks. We had a TechCrunch piece that kicked off the latest round at the beginning of the year. That was followed up by 2 or 3 different pieces that came off after that, where people were saying, you know, the results are crappy, the results aren't as useful as anymore, they're just they're being dominated by all this stuff. I don't know that that's actually true, but I do know more and more people are talking about it. I did an article that looked at one study of a consumer poll that found that, you know, it was like 90% of the people surveyed still said search engines overall are useful. And I still find what I'm looking for. But the same survey found that like 70% said the biggest problem wasn't that they couldn't find what they were looking for, but that there was a lot of noise. So I think there's a perception that there's much more noise here.
Even Google thinks so. I'm looking at a blog post from our friend Matt Cutts, who's been on the show a number of times, who is a Google engineer in charge of, in fact, killing spam on the web results. And he wrote a couple of days ago, January brought a spate of stories about Google's search quality.
Right, and he linked Jeff Atwood's Coding Horror, TechCrunch, and Read Write Web in that spate of stories phrase, which I loved.
He says, Google search quality is better than it has ever been in terms of relevance, freshness, and comprehensiveness. I mean, what is there an objective measure of that? I guess he says there is.
Well, that's one of the things that I covered in the story that, hey, Matt, you didn't even link to it.
Let's see those evaluation metrics.
But where I've been talking about, and I actually wrote a piece way back in 2002 called In Search of the Relevancy Figure. And what I was saying was that you want people want to be able to say this search engine is better than that and be able to quantify it. But we've never had that because the relevancy of search results is so subjective. So instead,
this is the so-called authority metric.
Well, authority are they relevant or not?
Right.
You get these proxies. We've had people say, well, you know, Google must be better than Bing or Bing better than Google because one has more pages than the other. Well, that doesn't tell you anything. Or that one's fresher than the other. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily more relevant. We literally do not have a commonly accepted standard of rating the search engines to know whether or not they are better than each other or worse, and whether they've gotten better or worse over time in terms of the quality of their results. Internally, they will tell you that they do their own testing, but that's their own measure, and it's not something that the external, you know, people externally necessarily are going to agree with. And surprise, usually in the years I've been watching the search engines, their internal metrics tell them that they're pretty good.
Right.
So, you know, what I'd hope is that Google, Bing especially, would get together, find some third party to figure out a way to go through and test whether or not they are more spammy or they are less relevant or if things are improving. And I don't think Google's had the incentive to do that before because everybody just accepted that they were the best. But now it's been a turnabout where everybody right. accepts they were the best.
Right.
More people seem to be more inclined to say, oh, yeah, I do think that they're worse, even if they aren't necessarily worse or worse than some of the other search engines.
There's at least some competition. I mean, you can at least say, well, you know, let's look at Bing and see how it's doing. But isn't it ultimately, let me ask you this, Mitch, isn't it ultimately, you said, you know, you didn't like the results, but isn't that ultimately subjective? Is there an objective measure of relevancy? Isn't one man's garbage another man's, you know, treasure?
Well, I don't know if you're looking for specific information, like how to do something. I don't think.
But some people need to know. You turn it off and on. Maybe they need to know that. Maybe you're an elitist.
Press the button. It's off. Press the button. It's on. How hard is that? I mean, I think one site, by the way, I wanted to bring up that I think does a really good job on this kind of content farming and does content farming ethically is Lifehacker. Because I don't really read Lifehacker anymore, but when I have a question on how to do something, if I type it into Google and I see a Lifehacker link up by the top, I'm like, that's it. That's going to be good.
I mean, I loathe to use the word content farm and Lifehacker in the same sentence. But I mean, that makes my skin crawl a little bit, I'll admit, because there's something sort of, you know, that there's a negative light right there. But the reality is that Lifehacker has some of the best Google, you know, SEO of all the Gawker sites, which is a huge network of sites. And a lot of that is just because our headlines are generally how to do X, you know, and it's at which people, that's what people search for. People search for how to's. eHow figured that out a long time ago. Lifehacker's headlines are very literal. They're often just very step by steps. And so they get a lot of traffic. And the Lifehacker editors watch the comments and watch the keywords that bring people in and watch the emails that come in. So we very much the articles that you see on the site come from direct requests from readers. So they come up in search results. I search for phrases and I find Lifehacker articles that I wrote in like 2007 come up.
I knew that. I forgot.
Yeah, I forgot I knew that. I forget. So I mean, I think, you know, this calling it a content farm or calling it, a site with good content and high SEO for good reason, there's a continuum there. It's really hard to say what it is.
So good content is not like porn, or is it? I'll know it when I see it.
Yeah, I think it is like porn.
So we could all, I think you're right. I think if the four of us sat down and I fired up four pages, we could pretty quickly say which are the good ones and which aren't, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Would we judge some of it by the number of ads on the page?
Well, if there's an ad covering the entire page before I look at the article, then that's gonna rate on it a downer.
Well, I got to mention there's quite a few prestigious websites that do that. In fact, almost all of the tech sites now do that. I hate it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Most of the mainstream news sites now put the big, says page, this is really disingenuous, page loading. But watch this ad for 15, 14, 13, and then skip this ad. It's like, well, if you're going to put an ad up, why put a skip this ad link? Make me watch it. I don't understand.
What I would like to see, and I've actually seen this, I visited a company that competes with Google, which I can't name, but internally, who has been developing a search engine, and internally, they had a simple web app with Google on one side and their product on the other. They would search, and then they would submit the results if they felt like Google got it better. So all we need, this is a very simple web app that just lines up Google against the other search engines. You search for a term, and then you report, you know, you report something to some sort of third party or, you know, I don't know, the creator of the app to say, this is a search in which Google's results were terrible and this one was better or whatever. And that would be pretty cool crowdsourced way and public way, transparent way to say the results on Google are better in these cases and worse in those cases.
Matt Cutts says, as pure web spam has decreased over time, in other words, just, you know, junk, Attention has shifted instead to, quote, content farms, which are sites with shallow or low-quality content. Sounds like demand media, right? In 2010, we launched two major algorithmic changes focusing on low-quality sites. So they are, they say, doing something about it. I don't know. I mean, it reminds me of when spyware started to come out and the antivirus companies were very reluctant to battle spyware because they didn't want to get sued because spyware or adware was, you know, just an ad. It wasn't malware. That's changed, I think, over time. But it does remind me of that. Isn't it very judgmental to say that's low quality?
No.
But then, I'll
give you an example of where it comes up. I've got two boys, and they're both in elementary school, and they were making fun of Justin Bieber once. And I've used this example before, but I said to him, "Well, you know, you might make fun of him, but he seems to be pretty successful." And they said, "Oh no, he's not successful. You know, he probably not made any money at all." I was like, "Well, I think he's probably done a little better than you guys." So we went back and we went to do a search. And bearing in mind, like, I'm, you know, a search expert, right? You know, this is what I do, is find information online. So we go off and I start doing some searches just to find out, well, how much money has Justin Bieber made? And you start doing that search, and what you do is encounter time and time again answer sites. Yahoo Answers, Answers.com. Oh my God. Cha-cha, you know, wiki answers this, da-da-da. And none of them have the answer. None of them have the answer. They have people guessing at an answer. They have people pretending that they know the answer. Sometimes they have answers that have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, okay, that would be bad.
To me, that is shallow or low-quality content.
Right.
And they're doing well because more and more people seem to be comfortable and performing searches in the form of a question. Relatively few other websites on the internet actually write content in the form of questions, right? They don't tend to do the SEO like what Gina was talking about, where you think, well, gosh, someone's going to sit down, they're typing in, how do I, this sort of thing. So their competition space is lower, and they have these authoritative domains. And I think that's what, you know, Matt and Google are saying that they're grappling with. Some of these things sometimes do have the answers. They do have good quality information, and some of them just don't. And should we get rid of them? And is there, and most important, because they're there, are they blocking the real answers from actually being found?
Right.
I wonder to what extent people, the general run of searching public, will find out. I mean, I think it took most of us watch it more closely, and it took us a few months to realize if it's an eHow link, I just don't want to click it.
I guess the question is, should Google put it in the results then, or rank it so highly then?
Ooh, then that gets into the question of, do they start blocking specific domains, which they have been extremely reluctant to do.
Can't you say, don't ever show me eHow again?
If you log in, right?
You used to be able to do that through Search Wiki.
Oh.
And I think they may still have that, but it was on a page-by-page basis. And in fact, after Matt's post came out, he did another follow-up thing. This was out on Hacker News, and we did a short piece on it at Search Engine Land, where he was saying, we might come back and give you the option to block whole domains. Yahoo actually had something like that as well, and I can't remember exactly what it was called at this point. But you could say, I just don't want to see anything else from this domain. And
of course, that would solve the problem, right? Because then I'm judging I don't like the domain, and I could block it.
I mean, you can always do -site:ehow.com, it's too much trouble, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I can't remember if Blacko has a slash tag. Blacko says that they have certain slash tags over there that are designed to keep content farms out and other lower quality content. But I can't remember if they created a slash tag that if you use it automatically drops out the most common Q&A sites. That would be interesting.
Who's that?
Blacko.
Spell it.
B-L-E-K-K-O.
Oh.
Blacko.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Blecko on the show.
Yeah, we talked about it when it first came out. That's the one where you do the slash tags.
Yeah.
And, I mean, most of the time I think a slash tag explicitly includes sites. So this would also solve the problem if you had, you know, if I create a slash tag on Tech News, I'm not going to include a site. I could say I'm not going to include a site that has interstitial ads. I mean, I could do anything I want. But but nobody uses Blecko.
Not yet, but I mean, what is interesting is here Blacko came out and they said, well, we're going to try, you know, we're going to come out and try to compete in this space that everybody else has been crushed in. And what they've done phenomenally well in is convincing people subtly that Google has a spam problem and that they do their own pushing out there. They actually launched something called a spam clock. I think it's at thespamclock.com. And they said, this is the amount of spam that's coming along. They have convinced some people that they actually have a better search algorithm, even though they don't necessarily have a better search algorithm than
Google. They're just using Google, aren't they?
No, they're crawling the web and they're doing their own searching as well. Oh. But they're getting themselves counted with, you know, the big players, because there's so few big players left. I just did a thing the other day when the Academy Awards came out, and I was kind of curious, well, who was getting you to the right place, you know, for the nominee list right at the very beginning. And it was like, okay, I'm going to compare Google and I'll compare Bing and, oh yeah, I'll compare Blacko. Because that's what I'm left with if I'm talking about
Google, Bing. It drops off. It's quite a cliff.
Yeah.
It drops off fast. Google, Bing, Blacko.
It's kind of fun to say, actually.
I do. I'm starting to like it. I'm going to blecko you.
Not on the first date, Leo.
No blecoing on the first date. By the way, who was the best? Because I have to say, immediately, I get up in the morning and I want to find out who the nominees are. And I Google Academy Award nominees, but there are a lot of articles that don't have a list. And so it wasn't easy.
I found it was a pretty close tie between Bing and Google. Both of them, and then I looked within, say, 15 minutes of them coming out. Both of them had their news boxes at the top. So there were lots of news articles about it. Right. But I was thinking, I just want to find the list.
Right.
And Google listed it number one, the Oscar website's homepage. You went to there, and the list was right at the top. Bing listed the actual nominees page at the Oscar site. So you kind of want to give them an edge, except that page was exactly the same as the homepage. Blacko, which of course has gotten some praise in various places, was listing a page that was 404 on the Oscar site.
Ooh.
So that was a failure. And, you know, they're going to have to step it up to be fighting among those other players.
Bad Blacko.
For news like that, I probably would have searched Twitter. For like something that happened, you know, that got announced in the last 10-15 minutes, I probably would have just searched Twitter.
Yeah. Yes, there's social search jumping right up.
Well, and in fact, it was Twitter that even alerted me to the fact that the nominees were out.
That's right.
Yeah,
me too.
Exactly.
That's
me
right.
Too.
I saw that and then I said, oh, let me get them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My mistake was going to Google at that point, apparently. I should have just read the tweets.
I think the tweet that I saw actually had a link, so I didn't actually even
search
Twitter.
Happened to me too.
I once in a while I'll go to search.twitter.com, especially if there's like a reality show airing on the East Coast and I just want to know the winner, that kind of thing.
Now I can just blame the curation. By the way, and I'll make this my tool of the week in a little bit. Matt, actually, there's a Chrome extension that Matt mentions in his blog post so that you can report. I think this is probably the best solution to this. Is let users say, hey, I found a site, but it really sure wasn't what I was looking for, or sure wasn't the information I needed. And you can now there's a Chrome extension you can use to tell
Are the reports public? I want the reports to be public.
I doubt that they are,
but I would love that.
Yeah, I don't think they are.
Mm-mm. Yeah. That's why I would love to see a third party set up something like that, where you know the community can post bad search results and have it be public so that other people can also see.
Is it something like the Académie Française preserving the purity of the French language by deciding? I mean, I sometimes feel like this is a little bit like old media saying, well, that's not good. They hired a $5 writer to write a silly article about something.
Well, I think if you go back again to what Gina was saying about what Lifehacker was doing or what things other sites may do. It's not, I think, that demand media is necessarily or some of the content farms have done something wrong. It's that most of these other publications existed because they're covering that area.
Right.
You know, they didn't say, I know, let's go figure out.
It started from their own interest as opposed to what the...
Yeah, there was some reason. It was an area that they actually had people dedicated to do. And then you've got other players coming in saying, hey, instead of figuring out, you know, what particular area we ought to cover on and specialize in and perhaps provide exceptional coverage in, let's cover everything anybody's interested in that is most likely to make money, and let's pay as little as possible to the people to create that content. Which is a clever business model, but it kind of rubs you the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. It rubs me the wrong way.
That's the difference.
Yeah, and then there's the whole separate issue of just driving down wages for writers, which as a writer myself, I'm not exactly in love with.
Well, that's what I mean.
We've been having this argument on the CMO site with a bunch of people defending it and my coming out and saying, look, you're just better off working at Starbucks. Write your own blog in your spare
time. And you'll feel better about yourself at the end of the day, too.
And you'll have, like, health insurance and stuff. And I finally had to come out and say, look, I'm not being metaphorical here.
I mean it.
Literally.
Go to work.
You know,
hey, do you get free Trenti lattes if you work at Starbucks? Because I might do that.
The Trenti latte is so big, you have to take a Starbucks break in the middle of drinking it because you don't have enough energy.
Apparently, you're not far off. Apparently, 30 ounces is actually bigger than the capacity of the human stomach. So you really couldn't or wouldn't want to drink it all at once. You'd erp up. And who says you don't learn something on This Week in Google? Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a break. I do want to talk a little bit about, a little story that broke the day after we did Twig last week. Eric Schmidt steps down. Whoops. I guess we should have led with that. Talk about burying
the lead.
Step up. He steps up.
He was elevated.
He was elevated out of here.
He's on the escalator. He was elevated right out of the building.
Right out of the building. And I do want to talk about interstitial ads, actually, now that you brought it up, Gina, because TechCrunch, actually, Mike Arrington posted a very interesting article on TechCrunch yesterday apologizing for the ads on his site. We'll dig deep into that in just a little bit. Before we go much further, though, I would like to say hello. Hello to my good friends at Ford, the makers of the fine Ford Focus Electric, my next car. It's going to come out in 2012. But yes, I will be replacing my lovely Ford Mustang, which I deeply love, with the Ford Focus. First of all, because I want to be a good citizen and I like the electric, but also it's, you know, they've upgraded the Ford Sync, which I have, to the new My Ford Touch. It now understands 10,000 commands. Of course, it's true hands-free dialing. Call Gina Trapani on her cell and boom, it does it. It's playing the music you want or the podcast you want. Play This Week in Google, episode 78. It does it. You know, it works with your iPod, your iPhone, your Zune, your all the different devices. In fact, if you've got an Android phone, some of the Android phones, like the Droid X, it will read you your text messages as they come in a lovely female voice. It's just fantastic. Now they've got Pandora and Stitcher, so that you can listen to the radio you want. With Stitcher, you can listen to us. Just queue up a bunch of twigs. The Ford Focus Electric for 2012 has lithium-ion batteries, very high capacity. You can charge it from your standard 120-volt outlet, but they also will... They're going with the folks at Best Buy. The Geek Squad will come and install a 240-volt outlet. I'm not kidding. In your house for 3-hour charging. I can't wait. It is a beautiful vehicle. You know, you want to see the inside of it, go to focuselectricpower.com. Focus, they're not a nonprofit. Sorry. Focuselectricpower.com. And you can learn more about this amazing vehicle. It is just so beautiful. I saw it at BlogWorld and then again at CES. By the way, John C. Dvorak and Paul Thurrott are going to test drive it next month in Madrid. And we're going to get a report from them doing that. But you can find out more. It's almost like it's like a virtual test drive. There's going to be an iPhone app, an Android app that lets you check your battery levels and tell it to charge during off-peak hours, things like that. Complete control. Just so slick. And very affordable. FocusElectricPower.com. Thank you, Ford, for supporting This Week in Google. Now, that's an interstitial ad. I mean, that's traditional broadcast ad. But we were just saying how much we hate that when a website, and the thing is, it's before you even get to the site, you have to look at an ad like this. TechCrunch will load in just a few seconds.
Yeah.
And actually, this is Mike Arrington writing, real blogs don't have interstitial ads. He said, I've fought this for years. Apparently AOL is putting these ads on TechCrunch.
They got to pay for buying it some way.
Yeah. Mike, I'm convinced Mike has a strategy to get out of
with you.
AOL.
I was going to say, I would love to have been in on the meetings that happened after this post because I have been on meetings like this at Gawker, which is a much, much smaller company than AOL, and they are never pretty. So I would have loved to have seen the AOL folks, sales team's faces after he posted this. Although I give Arrington a lot of credit for
he's manly. I mean, first he goes after Josh Topolsky, the Engadget blog, an AOL, probably the most profitable AOL property, and calls him all sorts of names, wrongly, by the way. But, you know, I'll defend Joshua to my dying day. I think Engadget's great, and I think they do a great job. But now he's going after the ad department. Now you're in trouble, Mike.
I think it's pretty entertaining. I don't really give him a lot of credit. He took their money, and now he doesn't want to work for them anymore.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. He says, whoever did it, I'm going to try to stop it, which will probably involve 6 hours of internal meetings and at least one PowerPoint deck. So at least you know it's going to cause me a lot more pain than it's causing you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've written a few of these. Like, we really screwed up with our ads on Lifehacker myself. And whenever it happens, it's always this very traumatic experience. Although I think Mike is a lot more, he just has a kind of temperament that's a lot better for this kind of stuff.
I'd be honest with you. I'm
just projecting.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in that meeting with Mike.
Yeah, there's always the question of how much AOL is kind of aware of this and sanctions it as a way to build traffic.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I've seen that happen in radio. It happens all the time. I remember Don Imus used to work with a guy named Pete Franklin. Franklin was Imus was in the morning. Franklin was the afternoon. It was on WNBC in New York. And they had a, quote, feud. I'm sure it was all play. At one point, Franklin steals into Imus's studio and takes the microphone. And Imus comes in the morning. There's no microphone. He actually did the show by phone. Now you got to figure WNBC. There's another microphone. It's all shtick,
yeah.
Right? It's all shtick. I think it's probably just shtick here. But I think it's fascinating. All right, let's talk about Eric Schmidt because really we should have led with that Thursday during the Google earnings call. Kind of a surprise. Larry Page, Sergey Brin, and Eric Schmidt got on the phone and. Eric says, you know, April 4th, I'm out of here. Actually, no, what is he? He's the executive director.
Executive chairman.
Executive chairman.
Yeah.
Which is that's
executive something.
That's a made-up title, I think.
Well, it's hard to say. According to the reports I've seen, he's going to be responsible for a lot of external relations and partnerships and dealing with government, which is a lot of what CEOs traditionally do.
Well, yeah. In fact, he was off to do that right after the announcement, right?
It's very strange to say that Larry Page is going to be the CEO now, but Eric Schmidt's going to be dealing with all these external relations is like saying that someone's going to be a cook now, but someone else is going to prepare the food. I mean, in other companies, external relations is a huge part of the CEO's job. So it's a very interesting development.
And they've got Sergey Brin to be the product guy. This is kind of how Google used to be before Eric Schmidt. Larry was the kind of the executive, right? I mean, that's not what I seem to remember.
He was CEO before.
He was CEO, and so this is just taking back his old job. It did seem like very friendly, but then we're seeing all sorts of rumors. Like, this is from the New York Post. Probably consider the source. Google honcho Eric Schmidt, who announced his plan to hand over control of the tech giant last week, is eyeballing a career in TV. Page 6 learns, and I'd read you the rest of the story, but there's some sort of interstitial ad covering it up.
Over it. It's lovely. Listen, I'm from New York. You don't read the Post. Let's not read the Post.
All right. You don't believe that?
Let's not read the Post. But there have been other reports of the TV show, which is just weird. I mean, I think I've said on the show before, Schmidt always kind of put me off.
Hey, so, this is a face made for TV. Don't you want to just tune right in and see what old potato head has to say?
You're not right. You're not right.
So I have three theories as to what's going on here. One of them, theory one, is from the guy who usually sits to the right here. I think that was where I read it, which is that this has been foreordained from the beginning.
Ah. 10 years ago, they made a deal that this would happen.
It wasn't really so much of a deal. It was just kind of the idea that, I think it was Jeff who wrote this, that Eric was always kind of the regent who would rule until the true heir to the throne grew up.
That's interesting.
My second theory, which is mine and by me, is that this is a man who's 55 years old.
How does he survive? How does he get up in the morning?
No.
He's got $100 million just recently.
Yeah. But,
you know.
Google is not his first career
success. For crying out loud, he's got his AARP card. Put him to bed. Give him some soup.
I'm just going to keep talking seriously here while you guys just...
I'm 54. That's all I'm saying.
I'm saying this is not his first career triumph. Right, he probably just wants to do something else.
Former CEO at Novell.
And was successful there.
Yeah.
Former executive at Sun was successful there.
Right.
He's
if you read his Wikipedia article, apparently he wrote a handy little Unix utility too in between.
Yeah. he was integral in pushing Microsoft off its perch. Anybody remember Microsoft? They used to be a big company.
Yeah.
This is a guy who probably wants to go do something else.
So but it's interesting.
Google's offered this bonus for him, $100 million award if he sticks around for another 6 years.
Oh, that's wait a minute! I didn't know there was a contingent. So, that's,
oh yeah, I thought he just got the money.
No, he's got to stick around. This is what this Reuters story is saying.
Oh, that's interesting.
Schmidt said he expected to spend another 10 years at the company, and this $100 million award, he would have to, it's an equity award, and to get it, he'd have to stick around for six.
Can I just point out the guy's worth more than $4 billion? $100 million in cigarette money.
$100 million isn't even.
Yeah.
Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, it's like not even. What is? It's not nothing.
It's still
okay. That just makes me sad. I'm just gonna leave now. I can't.
I think he. I think all of this is disinformation. You know what I think is going to happen? In 6 months, he's going to be the CEO at Apple. You watch. You mark my words.
Oh boy, that would be a trip.
Why not? Isn't that what he and Steve Jobs were talking about? When they had that little coffee clutch.
Oh, the coffee clutch. Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
Remember Steve was overheard saying, well, they're all going to find out eventually anyway?
Actually, what they were talking about was, did you hear that they have this train day latte? It's huge.
It's larger than the capacity of the human stomach.
They were planning to take over the world with near-field communications, right?
The $100 million equity award vests over 4 years.
It vests. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's not unusual to have that kind of a structure. Yeah. You don't just give somebody something, you expect something in return.
So we didn't hear Mitch's third theory.
All right. What's your third theory, Mitch?
Oh, the third theory is that the timing is good. In fact, and you know, Danny has written about this at length. Google's been kind of faltering a bit. You know, after Google Wave and after Google Buzz and all these other things that they've tried and failed to get into the market. It's a good time for changing the guard. Yeah. But I think that's kind of lower down than the other two things.
I think he's a little injured by this past year of kind of missteps and miscues, weird things that he said about, you know, the creepy line, go right up to the creepy line, but not across it. Things like that can't have helped his reputation with Larry and Sergey. Of course, Larry has said a few stupid things, too, like we want to be your brain.
That's a long time ago.
So he doesn't say that anymore?
Well, he hasn't spoken of the three of them. He's spoken the least recently. And that's been kind of my theory is both the timing and, you know, Eric just kind of being sick of it. I mean, he has had to be the public face now for 10 years. Yeah. This past year has not been a happy time for him in that, you know, he says something and sometimes
misinterpreted.
Sometimes it has been taken out of context. Right. Sometimes it's like, you just shouldn't have said that because it sounds dumb no matter how you say it. And other times.
But maybe that's a sign of his fatigue. Maybe that's a sign of he's kind of letting his guard down so he doesn't care as much anymore.
And I thought Ken Auletta had a piece. You know, he had spent a lot of time there to write his book on Google, and he was in contact with someone who said that seemed to be the case, that Eric was feeling kind of down and tired and, you know, thought he could get re-energized and really couldn't do it. So it just seemed like a good time to kind of check out and bring somebody in fresh, even though Larry isn't necessarily fresh, but at least if Larry has to start stepping up into the CEO space now and he goes on to some show, the first thing they're going to ask him isn't, so you said this, did you really mean all that? He kind of loses some of that baggage. The things people are going to start asking him is, so you're the new CEO, what are you going to be doing or what's going forward with Google? And it kind of changes the conversation, I think, a bit.
So the stock market reacted to Steve Jobs stepping down by killing Apple's stock price significantly. They reacted to Eric Schmidt stepping up by bumping the Google stock price significantly. Is the stock market right? Is this good for Google? Stock market's never wrong.
I find it difficult to say anything about stock markets because I usually find most investors seem to be idiots that don't understand anything about the companies that they buy.
Oh, yeah.
And I, you know, it's hard for me to tell you whether this is good or bad for Google because
you know what it tells you though is what the
there's so many pieces to them.
Right. It tells you what the conventional wisdom is, which is that Steve Jobs is integral to the success of Apple, and I think that that's actually probably true, and that Eric Schmidt is far from integral and perhaps even a hindrance to the success of Google. Is that true?
I think that's very well said. I'm, you know, if Eric Schmidt were to leave Google tomorrow, if he had said, "I'm quitting, goodbye. I've just, you know, I want to take that job. New York Post is right."
I have this TV job. Oprah's calling.
Google would not, I think, noticeably have a problem. You know, maybe Larry and Sergey might decide they need to have another person to kind of keep them focused, which seems to be the main thing that he's done based on reports, is say, "Hey, Larry, Sergey, look over here again."
That was his tweet. That was his tweet. Right. "Is adult supervision no longer necessary?"
But, you know, to where Steve Jobs really comes across as this visionary genius who really puts a lot of himself in product
is that kind of. Is that who Larry Page is? Is that who Sergey Brin is? Is there somebody at Google who is an analog to that? I mean, I've talked in the early days, 10 years ago before Eric, I remember, you know, talking with Larry and Sergey when it was a smaller company, they were much more available, and really having great conversations with Sergey about the search results. And they're really into the technology. In some ways, I think they are visionaries.
It's hard to say. I think what Google has instead of that is this belief in testing and analytics. So rather than Steve Jobs perhaps having an intuition and thinking, "I am so right that I'm going to do this and I will bring people into a new space," I think Google tends to launch a product and then watch what people do and then reshape it based on that kind of feedback to decide and do a lot of testing before they do it. So, you know, their muse is analytics, I suppose, in some ways. But it's hard to say. I can't recall many stories where it's come out that, wow, Larry really shaped it this way, or Sergey really shaped it that way, or it was Eric's vision that made this sort of thing happen. On a product level, occasionally you have individual product people who seem to have a vision. Wave was an example of that. You had a team that seemed to have a vision of what it was supposed to be, and it really was something different that wasn't out there. You know, you have individual products in that way, but not like an Uber product controller, I would say.
Well, let's not forget what Eric said was the justification for this, that they had three people participating in every decision, and that made the company not nimble and agile enough. So therefore, they had to have a division of labor.
Right. That it was, in fact, there were too many people.
Yeah.
Although then they said, "We're still going to have three people." So it's like...
Who's the third? Who's the third now?
We're all still hanging out and poo buddies and, you know.
Who's the third?
Well, Eric.
Oh, so
he was, you know, one of the things he said, "Well, we're still all working together. We're still going to be making these decisions and whatnot." So, I mean, that felt more like an excuse to me than anything. But underneath it, I thought the thing that perhaps was more notable was that previously Larry was president of technology, if I remember correctly, and Sergey was president products, or they might have been flip-flopped. I'll search for it in a second. But with this change, those titles went away. So Eric's been stepping up into this new thing that he's doing, which seems to be, "I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a glad hand and be nice to all the business people I need to make the deals with, but I don't necessarily have to go on CNBC anymore." Whew.
Oh, that's interesting,
and,
yeah.
And Larry seemed to be like, "All right, I'm going to be doing that role going forward. Get it. You don't want to be dealing with it. I'll pick that up. And I'm also going to take a firm hand on all of our existing products. And Sergey, your job now is blue sky. You are supposed to be figuring out where the hell our startup culture went and how do we start having products internally that are emerging instead of all these products now that we're either having to build, buy, or we're seeing people who used to work for Google go off and build them outside of Google." Because they said he's in part of strategic products and everything else. So to me, that was the main restructuring I thought that was going on with Google. It almost felt like they're saying, we're gonna build the garage again at one point, and Sergey's going to take control of that. And Larry will make sure that the house is staying in order that we're already living in. Maybe.
Well, that sounds, you know, business as usual. I feel like Eric's not going to be around that long. I mean, I think they made a lot of effort to imply that, to reassure people. I just feel like, you know, TV show or not, I don't think he's going to be around that much longer.
Yeah, that $100 million bonus points to You give somebody. It points to the idea that he had a foot out the door, and they want to drag him back in.
That he was ready to leave.
Yeah.
Well, the hundred million to me says, let's just give him this thing, and we'll put this vesting in there. Maybe that'll make some of the investor things that believe that he's going to stick around.
That's what I feel like all this
is, even though it's nothing money to him, right?
It sounds like Google wants him to stick around, right? And that they're just giving him incentive to do so. So it makes it sound like it was maybe more his decisions just to step away.
Yeah.
Or maybe that he does have a foot out the door. He has been thinking about that. Just, it seems like a symbolic move. Like, hey, we really want you to stick around. And this is why the vesting is built in. It's very common for companies to do this, even small startups. Vesting equity over time is a way to hold on to talent.
You never give people the award all at once.
Right.
If you want them to stick around. So it wasn't, right. In other words, it's not a goodbye gift. It's a stick around gift.
It's a we want you to stick around gift, yeah. Which I think is an interesting move, public move by Google, gesture.
All right. Let's see here. What else? Actually, tell you what. Let's take a break because there is a lot more to talk about. We're running short of time. We've got a great panel here. Gina Trapani from smarterware.org and lifehacker.com and ThinkUp.
ThinkUp.
And we'll talk about it later. A cool new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also with us, Danny Sullivan of SearchEngineLand.com, a guy who's been watching search engines for as long as there have been search engines. Is that about right? When did you start doing that?
96.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, back in the Alta Vista days. That's pre-Google.
We walked through the snow and mailed our queries to Alta Vista.
It was Alta Vista. It was Yahoo. Google wasn't there in 96.
No, it was Northern Lights.
Northern Lights.
Nobody that's alive now was alive then. It's amazing, actually. So, yeah.
What an interesting beat to cover something that is 100% changed.
Totally upended.
It's fun.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like it.
To come to work one day and say, oh, there's not going to be anything more going on. It's all done.
But that's why I love it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Also with us, Mitch Wagner, a fellow Diegan from the CMO site.
Yes.
.com. Glad to have all three of you on today, and we'll continue on in just a moment. And I'll do, if I'll tell you what, normally Jeff, who's not here, Jeff's at Davos, and the Germans wouldn't allow him to speak because they knew it was a Google show. So they've blurred his voice. But
Blurmany.
I'm in Blurmany. But he normally does a number of the week. So I'm going to give Mitch and Danny a chance. You have a few minutes while I do this ad, and then we'll get to the pick and the number and tool to come up with a number that you think reflects something, a trend in the news this week.
Number.
I'll let you search while I talk a little bit about Hover.com. Domain registration done right. I was so happy when Hover came along. Actually, Hover is not something new. You remember Domains Direct? They've been doing this for a long time, part of Two Cows. They've renamed and rebranded because they realized there was something missing in the domain registrars out there. They all looked like a carnival site. They all looked like, dancing chickens and 18 clicks before you could even buy something. And Hover said, it really should be easy. It's not a complicated thing. So they've created, if you go to twig.cover.com, you'll see how clean, simple, and easy it is. You couldn't get simpler than this. Search for a domain, transfer a domain. They don't do hosting, so they're not going to upsell you on their hosting. They do just a few things. You can either have your domain forwarded, which is what most people think of as domain hosting. I have leoville.com. The registrar doesn't host it. I have professional hosting service. They'll also do email forwarding for you. So you can have a domain registered with them. And this is a good idea. Even if you're not going to put up a website, get your own domain, a family name, or it's such a great thing. Because then with the forwarding, you can use Gmail or Hotmail, whatever the heck you like, or your ISP's mail. But you can change around your email address never changes. It's always, leo@leoville.com and has been for 20 years. So that's a if nothing else, a good reason to do this. You can have custom URLs as well. And it's very affordable. Plus, there's not the upsell. For instance, those other guys, they'll sell you privacy. Say, well, you've got the domain, but you don't want anybody to know where you are. So would you like to buy domain privacy? I went to the wrong site. It's free. on hover.com. It's included. It's automatic domain. Of course you don't want anybody to know your information. Go to twig.hover.com. You'll save 10% off your new domain with the Twig offer code. 25, if you've got a bunch of domains to transfer, I wish I'd done this. I thought, oh, I'll do it by hand. What an idiot. If you have a bunch of domains to transfer, just spend the $25 and they'll transfer them all, which is really great. Transfers are free. They will charge you $10 for the domain transfer, which is applied to your next year of registry. So, in effect, you're going to get an extra year of registry for $10 when you transfer your name over. That's a good deal. Twig.hover.com. Use the offer code Twig, and you'll save another 10% on top of that. We thank them for their support. Let's start with the... Well, we'll do a quick news rundown because there's so many other stories. I almost hate to leave any of these out, but we're running out of time. Android 3 platform preview and SDK tools. Have you looked at this, Gina? I know you're a developer.
I haven't had a chance to install the new SDK yet, but Lifehacker just posted a screenshot tour of what's in the SDK now. So this is a preview of Android 3.0, which is Honeycomb. No due date yet. It's a preview, so it's still unstable. Things might change. But it's Android built specifically for larger screens, so tablets, essentially. So if you hit Lifehacker right now and click on some of those images, you can see that there's a new theme. I think they described it as a holographic theme. Yeah. It looks really pretty.
Look how 3D it looks.
Yeah, it looks really pretty and optimized for big screens, tablet screens, but we'll also be running on the smaller handsets. So I'm super excited.
So we'll get this on our Android phones?
Yeah, I mean, they're not forking Android in the sense that there will be a tablet Android and then a handset Android. Like Honeycomb will be for all screen resolutions and sizes.
Okay.
Yeah, so eventually when it does roll out, everyone will get it. There'll just be support for larger screen resolutions. So it's looking really, really good. And you know, I think there's going to be some serious hot honeycomb action at Google I.O., which will be I think it's in May, but registration opens up in February.
And we're going to do that. You suggested, and I think we will do this. You're going to be there, I know.
I will be there if I can get registered in time because registrations go fast. But
So we want to do the show from there. I'm sure we can get some help from somebody at Google. Hint, hint.
I bet we could probably get
because I'd love to do the show from there. We covered it. They had last year. They had two keynotes, and with the first one was good, but the second one was where all the juice was, and we need to cover both of those and then do a show from there. So we'll do that in May.
That'll be awesome. But I bet there'll be a lot of Honeycomb. Going on at I.O.
I'm looking at the Lifehacker article, and all the attention goes to the eye candy.
Yes.
But there's some things that is more than eye candy. For instance, this is called the action bar.
If you click on that image, you can enlarge it.
Okay, we'll get more details here.
Yeah.
So this is in every application. There's some context-sensitive buttons here.
Mm-hmm.
This is a complete redesign. Look, there's the trash.
So you click this and stuff,
and this is refresh. So this will be consistent across the board on all
it
of
looks
them.
That way. Yeah. It looks that way.
Yeah, it looks like a Gmail app.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, a tablet optimized Gmail.
So there's two bars. They say the email. There's a new message button, a refresh button at the top. When you select a message, the action bar changes to display a move to folder button. So in other words, this bar here is going to be context sensitive, the second row down here, depending on what you're up to.
Which is huge, right? Because normally when you're developing an Android app, and I've learned this firsthand the last couple of weeks, you have to bury all this functionality in the menu, right? So you're asking users to tap the menu.
It's hard to find, too. They don't know.
It's hard to find, right? So if you have this constant context sensitive menu bar, which a lot of apps build in, Seismic builds in, a lot of the good apps actually build one in, but it'd be nice to, have it, as part of the development process. Like, hey, you're going to have this menu bar and buttons are going to change, depending on your context. So I'm excited about that. The keyboard looks good. Copy and paste looks good.
This is cool.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it looks like a much larger, this would be great on a tablet, that big keyboard.
Yep.
And the copy and paste is already in Gingerbread. This is that new, those new sliders. You haven't seen that on your Nexus One, but we have that on the Nexus S.
Aww. Twist the knife, Leo.
We had heard a rumor that you'd have to have a dual core processor, but now they're saying, no. That's just what we'd like you to have, but it's not required. Right?
Yes.
Because otherwise, that would leave every phone in the market out.
Right.
Pretty much be it. That wouldn't be good. Although, the fact that
it runs on imaginary phones.
The fact that they haven't updated the Nexus One to Gingerbread is a little concerning. Like, maybe they feel like, hey, once it's a year old, you got what you got.
Oh, this week I got a notification about an update, and it was Android 2.2.3.
Yeah.
And I just had that moment of like, yes, no. But I don't know. They said the next couple of weeks back in early December, so I'm hanging in there.
They haven't said no. You can now port your home number or whatever to Google Voice. I like that. $20. I don't like that, but that's nice if you have a number you want to keep. And you want to use Google Voice. I think everybody should use Google Voice. Is there any negative to Google Voice? Any of you guys feel that would make anybody want to stop before they port their main line to it?
Well, you can't port your main line, only your mobile number. Oh. So if you have a landline, you can't move that over yet.
Just your mobile numbers.
And I actually ported my mobile number over. They let me test it out for the past 6 months. So I moved it over, and I did a write-up yesterday about it. Probably the chief negative is, a couple people feel like sometimes the quality of Google Voice, because you're going through their network, doesn't hold up. I can't tell. I can't tell sometimes whether it's Google Voice or it's just AT&T or Verizon.
So if I port, Danny, if I port my iPhone phone number to Google Voice, does that mean all my calls now have to go through Google Voice?
They'll be routed through that, yeah.
If somebody
calls your number, it will go through Google Voice, and you'll be talking through the Google Voice network as it gets to your iPhone.
Oh, that is a negative.
If you call out, you can choose to use, if you will, your real number on the iPhone, and then you just go pure AT&T, or you can use Google Voice.
So you do have on outbound calls, you have the choice. It's only when people call. But that's the case when somebody calls my Google Voice number, they're calling me on Google Voice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For the most part, I've loved it. I mean, it's just the freedom, and it's my number. Plus, like, at one point, I had four different mobile phones I was testing. So it was great that I could just I felt like I could accessorize.
Right.
I'm going to go out rollerblading. I'm going to take the iPhone because it has the flip case. No, I'm going off here, and I got to walk around. I've got the Samsung Fascinate. It's very light, so it'll go in my pocket. You know?
Someday, all of us will have
today. I'll take the Droid too. But it made it very easy to know that any phone I took, I would have my phone number go to it. That was wonderful. Although, you know, people are not carrying four different phones.
No, but it's like what I was talking about with the email, having a personal email address and then having it forward. It's the same idea. Ultimately, in the future, we should all have one phone number. Maybe we should just have one thing. And that if an email gets sent to it, it's email. If it's a phone call, it's phone call. If it's text. Really, ultimately, shouldn't we just all have one number? That's
right, it? I have two items on my wish list for Google Voice, and I'm hoping Google listens to this so they'll do it. One of them is, I think you actually need more than one number. You need different numbers for your different roles in life. I want to give one number to my friends and family and another number to people I work with.
That makes sense.
So
I mean, I do that kind of because I use contact groups so that when my wife calls, it says, "Hi, honey. Sorry I missed you. Love you." And she says, "Do you tell everybody who calls you and leaves a message that you love them?" Because she doesn't really understand that. No, it's just for you. And then if a business associate calls, and there's different responses, and if it's a number I don't know, that's a third response.
I'm going to call your voice number. I want to know what my message is later.
Yeah, you know where you stand in the ranking depending on what message. I don't know you. I don't want to talk to you.
Am I in a message? Friends or coworkers?
I've always wanted Darth Vader music as my theme song. Just whenever I go in a room.
I thought Carmina Burana would be good, maybe. It's like you're calling Satan.
The other thing I want from Google Voice is a true desktop VoIP app. Because now I patch it through to Gizmo or I patch it through to Skype.
Gizmo,
and it's just like rubber bands and duct tape. And
they bought Gizmo and they took it off the market. Please do something with it.
Yeah, that's terrible the way Google does that stuff. They buy it and they kill it for a couple of years before they bring it back.
This is, by the way, Gina, if you call, this is your ringtone. Just teasing.
This is acceptable.
It's the Dark Fury on line four. The seventh rider of the apocalypse. All right. That's a good story. So no reason not to port. Go for it, man.
Love Google Voice.
Google buys a company called Say Now. This is to bolster their voice service. What is Say Now?
What is Say Now?
No idea.
Don't look.
Say now, say now. It's a song.
It's confusing. It seems to be something where you call celebrities and leave messages for them, and
I pity
then
the
they
fool.
Leave messages back or something like that. It sounds like some sort of stalker enablement service. Just
it may be
hang around David Letterman's house.
Yeah, you could call 50 Cent or Trisha Yearwood. Gee, decisions. Or the Jonas Brothers. Fans call and leave a message, and the stars can then, quote, call back. But see, now, obviously, they don't intend to apply. I mean, I think Google would say, well, instead of stars, what if this is you? Right? Celebrities can connect with their fans. No, this must be, they have no use for this. This must be, Dane Cook uses it.
And if I'm still there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I could call Dane Cook. Wow. Here's a Dane Cook. This is a call, Dane. No, that's not Dane.
I am live right now from my desk in LA. The word desk, I don't know why I like saying the word undercommitment desk.
I can't get the Carmina Burana out, but it's somehow suitable.
With my head down on a book that I'm pretending to read and drooling. And so I'm at my workplace. No, I don't like that either. That sounds like a person that's about to go home and...
This is the end times, actually.
So this is like voice publishing. This is like YouTube, yeah. But for voice.
I think that's kind of interesting. Yeah. I think that Google could do something with this. Not with Dane Cook, obviously.
Yeah, that is interesting.
What about, because they couldn't get Groupon, all the rumors are they're going to do a Groupon clone, or some sort of coupon thing.
Oh, yeah, it's coming.
Here it
comes.
They're
going to do it. People are finding Google coupons and getting that confused with Google Groupons, which aren't Google Groupons. They'll be called Google Offers.
They're coupons from Google.
Isn't that that's coupons? A nice ring to it, doesn't it?
That's Google Groupons. Groupons.
But Groupon.
That would confuse the hell out of everybody.
That would be great. But yeah, they're going to do it. And man, it's like, okay, if you don't want our $6 billion, we'll sink it into something else.
So it's called Google Offers. It looks and operates like Groupon or Living Social. You get an email with a local deal of the day. Mm-hmm. You could buy it. It's the same business. I guess there's
who's to say Google's going to be able to execute that?
Last week, what did Living Social, they were selling those Amazon gift cards, $10 for a $20 card.
Right. That's huge.
Google was going to put $6 billion into Groupon. I suppose that could give them a lot of money.
This is the cost, the true cost of that. Somebody wrote an article, and I would like to give them credit, but I can't. But the real cost of this is Salesforce on the ground.
Yeah.
Because both these companies have to put it's aggressively local. You've got to have a salesperson in every single market, at least. So this is a huge cost. You're talking thousands of new employees.
Yeah, and Google has never had a strength as a hands-on people-to-people company.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's they true. Could do some sort of Python Salesforce.
Yeah. Did you see the oatmeal state of the web?
Yes.
I know. But they're Groupon.
Love it.
Cartoon where it says a Groupon got young people excited about coupons again. It was just hilarious. It was one of my favorite parts of that whole comic.
Pulling it up right now. Let me, this is the state of the web right now. If you go to, I got to find the link.
theoatmeal.com/comics/state_web_winter. If you just Google the oatmeal state of the web, you'll
I
find
did,
it.
And I unfortunately I got
I blackoed it and it didn't find.
I got demand. I got Blacko gave me demand media. Yeah,
it gave me the Oscar results. Strangely,
well, yes. Speaking by the way, Blacko has created a. They have created a slash tag to block that out.
Oh, good.
State of the web. Oh, here we are.
Here Facebook. It is. The oatmeal state of the web. Facebook is now used by 1 in 13 people on Earth. Lord Zuckerbeast demands more. That's good. I like that.
He's got moobs.
Oh, he's got something. I don't know what that is. It looks like a happy face. It looks like a happy face. Every once in a while, Facebook makes all 500 million of these people switch to a new layout. Oh, my God. This new layout's an outrage. I can't believe it. 15 minutes later. Oh, hey, you're using the new Facebook layout. How do you like it? Verizon plus iPhone. There goes the one reason anyone ever signed up for AT&T.
Google. Oh,
this
don't
is the
say
this
it.
When I saw this one, Gina, I cried
just
for you.
Skip that one.
I cried
right,
for you when Yahoo almost buries Delicious, but apparently the internet is still using it. Dear Yahoo, if you sell Delicious, please sell it to someone who won't build a competing service within the same company. Yahoo bookmarks. Apple launches Ping, a social networking and music recommendation service, which subsequently takes over the music industry. Just kidding. No one's using that crap. he, by the way, made this Tumblr Goes Down page for Tumblr.
I love that. The That's Tumblr- a great, yes. great graphic.
And they used it.
If you're listening to the audio, look this up because it's a really cool
they
image.
They used it. It's so cool. That's neat. Now, finally, here we go.
Groupon was my favorite, though.
Groupon manages to make young people excited about coupons. 1910 and 2010. Holy hamburgers, Martha. Buy one shag of ground beef and get a free aircraft carrier-shaped cheese log.
Sweet Jesus, Bill.
2010 plus. Holy swine juice, Chrissy. Get $200 worth of pork chop milkshakes for only $100.
Jesus, coupon cap in Christ. The savings, so incredible.
Love that.
You use those things. You shouldn't mock Groupon users. You got a manicure for mani-pedi for 20% off.
I'm not a big Groupon person. No? Although I did find myself very excited about getting double points at the grocery store last week, and that's when I realized that I am truly in my mid-30s. Like I'm a grown up now. Or I'm excited about my club card.
Next thing you know, you'll be listening to talk radio.
I love the pork chop milkshakes though, because that just really encapsulates. It's like this thing that you absolutely do not want.
All right, let me sign up for Groupon.
Pork chop milkshakes.
That's it. We can get a mani-pedi together, Leo.
Let's see what today. $25 for $50 worth of tea. It's hipster at Samovar. It's hipsters.
I went through a week's worth of Groupons that came to me, and it was just constantly eat, work out, eat.
Yeah.
And get your hair done.
I wouldn't have time for all those.
They
say, what would Kevin Rose want right now? And then they put that on there.
Is there a lot of like hot air balloon rides and like paragliding, like all those kind of things that sound really exciting, but you never sort of get your act together to do?
How about a two-night villa stay and breakfast for two at Sonoma Coast Villa and Spa and Bodega? A 710 value, yours for just $315. The fine print expires in 1 year. Limit one per person. Reservation required. Subject to availability. 14-day cancellation. Is required to...
Do not taunt Happy Fun Ball.
All right, let's see. This is supposedly rushing through the stories, not so fast. Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook page hacked. Weird. However, good news, Facebook is now offering SSL. We'll soon offer SSL throughout the site. This is in response to Fire Sheep.
Finally.
Keep telling Mark not to use I am a sexy dude as a password. Just leave him alone, listen.
I'm Mark Zuckerberg and I'm a sexy dude. All right, let's get to our tip, and I hope you guys, I gave you time, have come up with some numbers, and I have a fabulous new tool of the week. But first, Gina Trapani, your tip of the week, dear.
Tip of the week. This is a really good one. I'm excited about this. New Gmail Labs feature, an unread message icon count. So if you go into your Gmail account, you go into Labs, you enable this new lab on your icon, on the Gmail icon, it will show the number of unread messages in your inbox, which is awesome because it means you can pin the tab, say, in Chrome and only show the fave icon, but also know how many new messages you have. This feature has been in the Better Gmail Firefox extension, which I maintain.
Which I maintain,
and it's really cool. And actually, a Gmail engineer emailed me and said, hey, what do you think should go in Labs? And I said, look at my extension. I think all these things should go in Labs. And that was a while ago, but it finally happened. So it's really cool that you don't have to install any extra add-ons or extensions to get this. And it's just super useful to, not that I recommend monitoring your email box constantly, but it's a nice way to see how much mail you have without having to switch tabs or get any sort of toast or pop-up.
This is good. You go every few days or weeks and look at what's in Labs because there's always new stuff, isn't there?
There is always new stuff. They tend to do a post on the official Gmail blog about new Labs. So yeah, I just keep on top of the blog because Gmail is literally one of the things I spend most of my time in during the day. So that's something that's...
I've turned it on. So now this is going to appear where in the icon?
In the fave icon in the tab. So.
Oh, that's cool. So I could just kind of go to another tab, but then I will see how many messages I have managed to ignore.
Right.
In the,
so if you... it's loading.
Yeah, you know how many tens of thousands that number is going to be?
Are you actually really going to stretch
counting. Checking, counting, counting.
It's going...
I can't lift it. That's too big a number.
It's going to be wider than the fave icon.
We're going to need more tabs. All right. Thank you,
Gina. For normal people who have less than 10,000 messages in their priority inbox, it's very, very...
It's still counting.
No judgment. No judgment. Is it still counting?
It's still counting.
That's nuts. It look, the spinner even gave up.
The spinner's like,
the spinner's like, I can't do this anymore.
I can't go on. I'm
I need to get
it's going to show up like there is no number that large.
It's just it's going to say Google.
It's going to say like a lot.
It's going to say you have a Google messages in your Google inbox. All right. Well, that's good. No, that's a good tip. I like that. Now, who have among you, the two of you, Danny and Mitch, do you, either of you, have you a number? Should I start with Danny?
Oh, I have one.
Mitch has a number. He's going to get you off the hook, Danny. Yes, Mitch.
The number is, I'll tell you how I got the number because I'm so cool. I Googled Facebook number and came up with a Time magazine article that said mobile is going to be the number one priority. So then I went to the original Wall Street Journal article, which said 200 million is the number.
Wow.
200 million is the number of people who access Facebook on mobile devices every day.
Every day?
Yes.
Wow.
Amazing.
That is amazing. That's quite amazing.
And the CTO, Brett Taylor, said that mobile is going to be the top priority for Facebook development going forward. And one of the things they're going to be doing is trying to move to HTML5 because right now they have to run 7 different versions of the client.
Ay, 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 caramba.
Yeah. Wow. So I am very awesome for having
200
come
numbers.
Up with that.
The 200 million, that's a great number.
Yes.
And my tool of the week, I was looking around. I saw the Android marketplace, and I said, what is this todo.texttouch? And it turns out for a mere $2, I can have Gina Trapani's first Android application. Yay!
Hey.
What does it do?
Tap the button. This log
button?
In to Dropbox. Yeah.
Oh, I got to log in to Dropbox. So it saves this is from todo.txt, which I've always loved, which is a text-based to-do list. You could store it in Dropbox, and then it'll load it in here. We talked about it last week, but I just wanted to say, it's in the marketplace! Yay, Gina! Congratulations!
Yay for Gina!
Thank you. Actually, it was an experiment. I wanted to test this hypothesis that no one buys apps on Android. So if you go to the GitHub repository downloads area, you can download the app for free, but it's for $2 in the market, and if for your $2, you get auto updates and that kind of thing through the market. Hundreds, not thousands, but hundreds of people have bought the app. So people buy stuff on Android, even though they probably don't buy as much as many apps as they do on iOS. People do buy stuff in the market. So I'm really excited. I want to thank everyone who did buy the app. There's lots of really cool updates coming, offline use, home screen widget, location-based stuff. It's going to be really cool.
And it's well worth $2. I don't care that I can get it for free. It was very easy. It's great. I'll log into my Dropbox and I'm going to have my to-do list on here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have your name in my Google Checkout orders inbox, Leo. Thank you. Did you see it? I did see it. I saw it for just a couple minutes ago. So thank you.
Yeah, I just bought it.
Awesome. Thank you.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That is our This Week in Google for this week. Jeff Jarvis will be back next week, but I will not. I'm off on Mac Mania 11, where Steve Wozniak and I will attempt to cross Cape Horn with little more than a green laser and a prayer. Actually, we're going to go to Antarctica. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'll report back.
Are going to miss you.
Well, I may be able to get on. We'll see. There's some question about maybe I could somehow get on. But we'll see.
Take a vacation. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Do what you got to do.
Jeff will be back. Jeff will be back next week. And I thank you all for being here. Danny Sullivan is at searchengineland.com. Obviously, you could tell from just listening to Danny, this is the place to go if you want definitive coverage of all of this stuff. I read it religiously every day. SearchEngineLand.com. Thank you for being here, Danny.
Thank you very much for having me.
Appreciate it. Mitch Wagner, it's also been great to have you. We finally got you on. I'm really pleased. Please don't be a stranger. We'll get you back soon.
Great. I'd love to be on.
Mitch is at the CMO site, SITE.com.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you for joining us. We do this show every Wednesday afternoon around about 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time at live.twit.tv. And if you want to tune in and watch it live, we encourage you to do so because we've got a great chat room at irc.twit.tv, and you can watch and chat at us.
But Someone said no adult supervision next week, Leo.
No adult, yes. I'm going to tweet that. No adult supervision needed. I'm going away. I'm done here. I'm going to be the executive chairman. I could be the executive twit.
That's a good one.
Not so bad, yeah.
I like chief twit.
I am the chief twit. Somebody sent me a note saying, I don't know why you call yourself that. Don't you know what twit means? I said, yes, I know what twit means. I've been calling myself that for 6 years.
Better than being the assistant twit.
Yeah. Well, we got those out there. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. And we will see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.